Welcome to Renegade Inc. The ongoing super feud between America and Russia has caused colossal collateral damage internationally, and everyone will feel the effects of the fallout. But what if there is a project that Russia and the US can collaborate on that would bring peace, progress, and prosperity? The Intercontinental Railway is that ambitious project, connecting former foes to trade with one another, which would generate commerce, not conflict, for everyone. Rick Minnick, welcome to Renegade Inc. Lovely to have someone in the studio, firstly, but also a filmmaker.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Rick, you made a film called The Straight Guys, and ostensibly The Straight Guys is quite a story about, I was going to say a straightforward story, and it would have been a dreadful pun, but it's a straightforward story about a train line. Where is the train line from, and where is it to?
So the train would start in Edmonton, Canada.
Yes.
And would end in Harbin, China.
Right.
And that's 5,500 miles, and it would connect the existing railroad system in North America with the existing system in Eurasia.
So, in a sense, it's one belt, one road. The Chinese are constructing. Mm-hmm. Is it version two? Is it one belt, one road version two?
Well, it should be a part of the one belt, one road initiative. It isn't yet, but hopefully someday it will become part of that. It would certainly help it to get developed.
So it's a story about a train, but it isn't, is it? It's actually a story about national identity, cultures, people, collaboration, trade. That's what it's really about. Because what you're trying to do, what they're trying to do with this train line, is put it through countries that, let's say, haven't had the best history.
Right.
Is that a diplomatic?
Yes. Yes.
And especially at the moment, America, Russia. Just give us that context.
Yeah. The U.S. and Russia have, as we all know, have a pretty difficult relationship. So the train would go through Russia, China, Canada, and the United States. So there are four countries involved.
Yep.
To get it built, it would essentially require a treaty between the U.S. and Russia, right, which obviously is not going to happen under the current situation.
Really good timing on releasing the film, by the
way. Yeah, well, it just happened to be after 12 years. We just happened to finish it right just before a war. But curiously enough, the idea has been around for 150 years.
But you see, that's the interesting bit, isn't it? Because when you come to the historical context of it, it's not about the last 12 years or even
the last 50 years.
This idea has been there and burgeoning, and it just needs birthing.
Yes, that's true. And in 1906, it was almost built. The money was, stocks were issued. The New York Times reported about it. But then there was an intrigue in the Tsar's court. An advisor said, don't do this, otherwise the Russians will use it, or the Americans will invade. And then after that, one war after another got in the way, and now we have another war.
So let's talk about casting. We've got Scott Spencer, George Kumol, and Joe Henry. They make up the bulk of the narrative. Why are they so important, and how did they come together?
Okay, George Kumol is largely credited as the person, as the man who revived this 150-year-old vision back in the late 1980s. When the Cold War was actually the last years of the Cold War, he started pushing this. And then once the Cold War ended, he was able to get some momentum going on the Russian side. George he fled the Czechoslovakia in 1969, and he's a mining engineer and ended up in the United States. So he's always had this deep desire to kind of link the East and West, Western souls, you know, in his heart. And then the initial enthusiasm from those the early 90s, when there was a lot of U.S.-Russian collaboration, for instance, International Space Station.
Yes.
As the 90s progressed and conditions got more and more chaotic in Russia, that enthusiasm wore off, and then both countries slipped into their old ways again. And this has kind of slid into the background.
And what we see now is that frozen conflict.
Yes.
Let's have a quick look at one clip from the film.
So far, Scott seems to be making a good impression. It turns out he's an old train buff and has arranged a ride on the Alaska Scenic Railway in a special treat for George and Joe.
So So here you are, here's your names, George. Joe, there's your name, and there's Victor's name.
Well, there's my name too.
Well, of course, that's yours to take home.
Okay.
Because another important milestone for this railway will be driving the first spike. So, hey, Harley, thanks very much. It's been great riding your railway, and thanks for joining us.
But I think one thing that's important to keep in mind with this is that the straight guys, George and Joe, and me as an assistant straight guy, I think our perseverance, our personal commitment is the same. We're not expecting a dime out of this. This is a way that we know that we can serve our country and serve the world. Yeah, maybe someday I might be able to get hired with one of the consortiums, but I'm not banking on it. George is at the point of his life where he knows he spent over $297,000, he told me for the first time, because I always wondered how he did these conferences and these travels. I don't expect he thinks to get any of that, let alone profit off of it.
When we watch that clip, the thing that really stands out for me is that these guys have dedicated themselves to something which they'll never see the end of. It's certainly bigger than themselves. But at the heart of it, and I come back to it after that second point, is it's about collaboration. And we have a world now that is full. We've got huge population issues. And what we need more than anything is collaboration over conflict and competition.
Absolutely.
This rail line is the epitome of that, isn't it?
It is. It is. If you look back in history, railroads have really been the engine that have driven development. In the United States, it was the Transcontinental Railway that connected the East and West Coasts. In Russia, it was the Trans-Siberian Railway that connected this enormous country. And the Intercontinental Railway would be the extension of that. It would really be linking continents. It would link Asia and North America. And you know, the entire world would be connected by rail as a result. So it's really kind of like the ultimate globalization project in my vision, in my mind. Scott and George and Joe, the straight guys, they say that they've done projections that it would transport 3% of the global trade, which is the equivalent of the Panama Canal.
Wow.
And because of the curvature of the Earth, it's a shorter distance going through the Bering Strait way up north and would be about 1 week faster than going by ship.
And also the green credentials are there, aren't they? Because ship is famously polluting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The Intercontinental Railway would be powered by renewable energy sources like tidal power plants and hydroelectric along the route. Plus, it could be used wherever you have a railway. It's a great opportunity to run power lines and fiber optic cables and stuff along the alignment.
So, from where I'm sitting, what I see is that this is all ready to go. The only big problem is human beings are getting in the way. A different way of saying it. A different way of saying it is life's very easy. It's people that complicate it.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, actually, some people whenever the straight guys were presenting their project. Basically, we follow them along the route, the proposed route through Alaska to the Bering Strait and in Russia. And they presented to various groups, stakeholders along the way in these like Alaskan villages and stuff. And one of the first questions is always, how much does it cost? And when they say $100 billion, jaws would drop. But then Scott was always quick to say, well, that's what it cost. The International Space Station cost $100 billion. And you know, it's due to be decommissioned in the next years. But this intercontinental railway could be in place for the next 100 or 200 years. It's really a long-term investment.
Put it a different way, $100 billion for the military industrial complex, that's chicken feed in comparison.
Yes.
And actually, this has got a social benefit as opposed to blowing people up in far-flung places.
Yeah, the straight guys like to say that they say that the Intercontinental Railroad would bring peace, progress, and prosperity to the entire world.
Yeah, but the neocons are so cynical, they're saying, I'm going to hear that. We're going to go bomb.
Yeah, sure. You could take that from the cynical thing. But if you really think about the thought behind it, is that if you are doing business with someone and you're intricately linked in an economic way, you will think twice before you start a war with that other
100%.
Party.
100%. We often quote on this program Alibaba founder Jack Ma. And he was at Davos or one of these talking shops. And he said, you know, what do you see the problem with the US at the moment? He says, too much war, not enough investment. Mm-hmm. And that's diametrically opposed to the One Belt, One Road strategy right. coming out of China. Mm-hmm. And what you're getting at as a filmmaker, and I'd love to know why you picked this up, is that actually we can promote prosperity, peace, abundance, and trade if mm-hmm. we do this.
Yes.
What's not to like?
That's what I keep asking.
So what are we doing? I think you should get your spade out and start digging.
I think maybe you have to really go back to following the money trail. Yeah. And this inevitably takes us back, unfortunately, to the military-industrial complex, and that there's just more money to be made in war than in peace. And, or at least that's the perception of the people in power, at least in the United States. Short term.
But not long term. The Chinese think in 200-year blocks.
Yeah, that's why the Chinese are... why. I would say the 21st century is the Chinese century. Yes. They're very far. I've been there several times and I've seen for myself just how advanced they are. And it has to do with long-term thinking. And just look at how much they're investing all over the world. With the new Silk Road, you know, they've had huge investments in Africa. It's a long-term thinking. And I think in the United States, that type of a mentality, it just doesn't exist. I think it's tied to the election cycles too much. Politicians are looking for short-term gains that will get them reelected so they can stay in office and have more power. And they're not really looking for, you know, investing in infrastructure just isn't sexy. It's like, it's a long-term thing. Who want, you know, building new bridges and railroads and things.
But if you look at American infrastructure, it's shot. I mean, it's absolutely, buildings are crumbling, bridges are crumbling. Yeah. You mentioned mentality. Let's just talk about mentality, specifically American mentality and Russian mentality. Before we started shooting this, you were talking about the Russians being a lot more broader mentality, a lot more cross-border collaboration. Mm. The Americans maybe a little more insular. They want total control. I suggested to you maybe that's an insecure way of going. Mm. Why is it that your fellow countrymen, the Americans, don't understand that if they take one step towards somebody to collaborate, actually, that person will step as well, and mm-hmm. you can do something together? Why do they need total control all the time?
The U.S. just likes to call the shots. I think that the U.S. came out of World War II with this clear perception that we're the good guys and we won the war. And like, it's easy for the United States to forget that the Allies won the war, and that the Allies included the Brits and the French and the Russians.
And the Russians.
Wow. And at the end of the Cold War, I think the United States has this clear perception, or at least the people who are in power in the United States, that the United States won the Cold War, or that the West won the Cold War, but specifically the United States. And they treat Russia as the defeated enemy. And I think that's the absolute wrong approach. Anyone who's been to Russia knows if you go to Moscow or St. Petersburg, they are far more advanced than any American city in terms of public transportation, their infrastructure, the culture and everything are far more advanced. And Americans, I don't think that they understand that. I just don't think they're very interested. And I had the impression during my several trips to Russia while making this film that the Russians are just more curious about the world and are more open to collaboration because they see that they can benefit in the short term and in the long term. And maybe that's their way of trying to get reintegrated into the world or something, getting some acceptance. You know, what's going on right now in Ukraine is absolutely horrible, but I think part of the problem could be traced back to the fact that Russia has been, exiled from the world, kicked out of the G8. They kept telling us that they really were waiting for the U.S. to reach out to them. And my impression was the Russians just wanted a seat at the table, and they wanted to negotiate at eye level with other partners, especially the United States. And I think there's something in the way U.S. diplomacy works that they just don't want to see Russia as an equal and worthy partner.
Данный проект, который вот мы сейчас обсуждаем, он фантастически хороший. Уверенность в том, что это самый великолепный проект этого века, и у нас есть возможность доложить Путину. Но и в вашей стороне, американской стороне, но Трамп всегда нацелен на такие проекты.
This visit to Russia is important to get to that first step of digging this railway.
Мы проходим очень большое испытание. Особо хвалиться нечем, потому что те санкции, которые вводятся против нас, они вредят не только нам, но и Америке, и многим другим странам. И очень тяжело у меня встреча состоится. Я без сомнения я скажу, вот бумага со мной, я таскаю, возьмите, прочитайте. Вы себя прославите. Действительно, это мощный проект, очень мощный.
И очень хочется, чтобы господин Трамп над этим проектом и поручили хорошенько изучить их, отбросить то, что между нами есть, понимая, насколько эти проекты важны не только для Америки и России.
It's very encouraging to see how we can work together.
И очень впечатляет и воодушевляет, как мы можем работать над этим проектом.
Mr. Aslakhanov echoes a sentiment I've been hearing throughout my travels with the straight guys. That Russia sincerely wants to connect to the United States and be treated as a worthy and equal partner. They're just waiting for us Americans to take the first step. But is it really this simple?
Welcome back to Renegade Inc. I'm joined in the studio by Rick Minnick and also joined by Scott Spencer, who is in West Virginia. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. In that first half, Rick and I talked about The Straight Guys, a film that he's chosen to make. But if we go back to 1992, you got on board at one of the very first conferences. Why did you decide to get on board?
Well, I think in all our endeavors in life, we always look for a way to leave the world a better place than we found it. And for me, the Intercontinental Railway, I thought, was a compelling project that the world really needed at that time, and even more so today. And as a railroad expert, I thought I could bring my railroad operating expertise to the table. And being from Delaware and so close to Washington, our founders, George Kumal from Arizona, Joe Henry from Alaska, and Victor Vasbegan from Russia, we all thought there was a good opportunity for me to help provide a presence for the project in Washington on a as-needed basis as well. So it was a good synergy and for a great project.
What do you see, especially now, with what's going on in Ukraine and the world more broadly? Why do you see that this is the moment to push this and get the Intercontinental Railway working? Why now?
Excellent question, because I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, well, that's the end of this project. And not at all. I think no matter what our differences in the world, and you look through history, all great nations will always have differences. But I think there's a lot of commonality in what we wish for our futures, for our children's future, and for the greatness of our respective countries. And so when you look, as you see on this Russian version of the project's flag and the American version as well, the foundations of this project are rooted in peace, progress, and the bottom line being prosperity for all the nations involved. This military conflict in Ukraine is going to take a great deal of healing, recovery, and rebuilding. And I can think of no project that can bring such greatness and such results for all the nations involved than the Intercontinental Railway. Where we begin, I think right now, immediately with the situation in Ukraine, I think it is vital that we have a ceasefire and a rollback of the troops out of Ukraine, and a 21st century solution, because this has to be in place for the life of this project. Remember, this project is going to create infrastructure that will be in service for 100 to 200 years. So there'll be any number of political differences even after the project is built. But we need a 21st century solution, because as we've seen in Ukraine, threat-based diplomacy of consequences and sanctions have failed. And unfortunately, people are dying. Ukrainians are dying. Good Ukrainians, civilians have died. Good Russians have died. It's a sad loss. But a 21st century solution, when you look at our civilization, a military is prepared to fight a conflict 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right? But we have no such approach to diplomacy. So in this situation, we need to put in place with a ceasefire and a rollback, a crisis resolution team that is negotiating with an ABC team 24 hours a day, 7 days a week between Moscow, Kiev, and Washington to resolve the differences in a mutually beneficial way. And I say mutually beneficial because we keep saying how diplomacy has failed, but we're leaving out something in this diplomacy, and that's mutually beneficial diplomacy, not just relying on threats and sanctions. And I lay all this out because this is the insurance we need for political cooperation well into the future for the Intercontinental Railway to succeed. I think politicians tend to take the easy way out and just play the blame game. It has nothing to do particularly with Russia. Look internally with our own politics rather than figure out a mutually beneficial solution to an issue. The blame game is followed very quickly, and that can have disastrous results. The longer this conflict in Ukraine continues, the greater the risk of disaster results for all the nations involved. And that's why, again, I'm pointing out that the principles of an intercontinental railway can be a basis for our nations to work together. And when people say, how is that possible? How can the United States and Russia even get past this conflict? Well, we can look ahead. Every 90 minutes, the International Space Station is floating above us around the world. And it has been an excellent model. And it should be really nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for the cooperation that Russians and Americans and other nations have had. And we view that as a model for how the Intercontinental Railway can succeed where most people think it's not possible.
Did you see that when you first heard Scott speak and see the vision that he was putting across?
That's when it really made sense to me when he started talking about the space station. Because it's a concrete example of cooperation that's been successful regardless of what's going on here on Earth between the U.S. and Russia. And I think he's right. I think that once this railroad is up and running, people are going to be like, why didn't we do this before? That's as Scott likes to say, you know, once it exists, people are like, wow.
We should have been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Scott, what's one thing that has really changed your mind when you've been working on this project? What's the one thing that, because when filmmakers work on films, they start with an idea and by the time they finish a film, they've changed their mind on something or it has changed them. What has changed you specifically about international relations?
Rick really has been devoted and dedicating to telling this story. The world needs to know. And the world can know more about it as well by going to our website, intercontinentalrailway.com. It's also there in our pages that are in Russian as well. I wouldn't say what's changed me, but what has confirmed the goodness in our world is the opportunity I had to travel across Russia to Eastern Siberia, to Yakutsk, and to meet with Russian officials and an advisor of President Putin in Moscow. That, look, when I was in those meetings, issues like the sanctions came up. And I said, look, I'm a private citizen. I can only speak as a private citizen, but I do know both our nations take pride in negotiating ways that ultimately benefit our nation rather than not talking. And that's what's so concerning to me about this present situation in Ukraine. It's obviously very tragic, the deaths on both sides. But the longer we're not talking directly, the greater the risk, the greater the costs. And that's why I can't speak about the Intercontinental Railway without saying that our leaders need to talk directly and do so under a ceasefire and a rollback of the troops so we can look at options like rolling back the sanctions in concert with that. There's all types of options that could be, as I said, mutually beneficial diplomacy.
And the Intercontinental Railway is the event that you can hang those things off, isn't it? That's what you're getting at.
Well, it's also the great next step. I mean, look at the pain that our world came through after World War II and those conflicts, and the difficulties we had with Germany and Japan. Yet we found ways to build those relationships to be more successful, so we weren't just adversaries, but we're actually doing things constructively together. And that's why I say the Intercontinental Railway is so beneficial for the world. For instance, the issues of the environment, the issues of the constraints of trans-Pacific shipping on the economies of Asia, as well as North America, are not going to go away. And if we're going to grow successfully, there is no amount of ability to expand ports in North America, even if you wanted to tear up more land or urban areas for expanding ports, even if you wanted to spend the money, we can't do it. The Intercontinental Railway is a relief line via the Bering Strait to the supply chain woes that we saw with ships stacking up outside of America. That's not going to go away. And remember, what we're discussing here today, Ross, will have an impact on this world for the next 100 to 200 years. And so you asked why I got involved. I think everybody seeks in life, as I mentioned, something that leaves the world a better place than they found it. And that certainly is the case with the Intercontinental Railway in so many ways. It requires China and Russia to work with the United States and Canada in a mutually beneficial way.
Scott Spencer, congratulations on the Intercontinental Railway and also for your vision from 1992, no less. Most impressive, the tenacity to stick with it. And Rick, congratulations on the film.
It's
just about to be released into the world. More people should see it and understand that we have way more in common than we do have different. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it from Renegade Inc. this week. You can drop the team a mail, studio@renegadeinc.com. Join us next week for more insight from those people who are thinking differently. But until then, stay curious.